to Chris Andre, hosting Air Cascadia Headlines, Interviews, and Commentary. Stay with us at 10:15 for Flashpoints today, featuring the moving new work of Ta-Nehisi Coates, recorded at a special benefit for KPFA Pacifica. And at 11 o'clock, the Radio Zine presents coverage of the December 16th People's Panel, sponsored by Know Your City and Portland Tenants Unite. It's called Rent Crisis, A People's Perspective.
I'm David Barsamyan, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, December 30th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is should be familiar to Air Cascadia listeners, Steve Horn, investigative reporter at Canada's inimitable Dismount blog and a frequent guest on Air Cascadia is with us this morning to close out the most alarming year experienced. I actually would like to be able to laugh more than I do, but I guess we're all learning how to laugh and cry at the same time. If we aren't, we're not paying attention. That old adage is truer than ever. My old adage for my applicable really to my own life now seems to have some sort of bearing upon the current situation. That my adage being, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stranger. This seems to now map straight on to what we've seen in the way of weather. The scariest part of this whole scenario is on the way, actually. What is referred to as El Nino, perhaps we should drop that term, because it comes from a time when you could predict climate, you could predict weather. There were currents, there were things that remained within certain parameters year after year. All that is gone. I farm. I know this. This coming year, I can't plan anything because I don't know what to expect. On my tiny little family farm, that's bad enough. But when you think about huge agricultural businesses, agribusiness, whatever we might think of them, those cannot afford to fail. If they fail, the nation fails. There is no food supply. So we ought to think about that. We ought to think about population, because it's going to be bloody hard to take care of a population that continues to expand with food supply that contracts because weather is so unpredictable. Get this. Over the past, there have been tornadoes. The December 21st, up until this Monday, it was the longest streak on record of December days, was a tornado. By some measures, it was the most moisture-laden ever during the winter months. One tornado in Mississippi was so strong it ripped the carpet off the floor after destroying a home. The series of tornadoes also hit Texas the day after Christmas. The worst one seemed to have occurred in Garland. This is the worst in 90 years. Many of these measurements go, what we're seeing now, go back beyond the length of time that records have been kept. The same storm system brought heavy rains to the Midwest. Huge, biggest floods in history on the Mississippi River south of St. Louis. The road closures to high water blanketed Missouri water levels. Once the Mississippi, with all of this flood water, makes its way down to the Gulf of Mexico, no one knows what it's going to do. It's probably going to tear New Orleans right off its foundations. And a fleet of weather monitoring equipment near the North Pole is apparently, there's going to be a rather extreme body of warm air is going to hit the Arctic, and it's going to hit pretty soon. We really don't know what's going to happen then. The North Pole will be warmer than Western Texas, Southern California, parts of the Sahara. Get that? Did you get that? The North Pole. The North Pole will be warmer. Weather forecast for Wednesday morning shows a rare midwinter warm front, 50 or 60 degrees. That should terrify you. That should terrify you. If you're still laughing when you hear this, you better go find another planet to laugh on. We have a wild assortment of headlines, as you might well imagine, but right now we've got Steve Horn on the line, and I want to welcome you back to the KBOO Airwaves, Steve. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Can't imagine a better person to... This is the last Air Cascadia for this year, and we've got some stories that are out on the smog blog. I don't know how you people do it. You keep coming out with the most extraordinary investigative reports on environmental issues ever. Let's see. Can we talk about all of these things? The third part of this discussion, I did want to talk about the three prominent First Nations organizations that are calling on our new Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to cancel the regulatory reviews of three major oil sands pipelines. Why would First Nations want to cancel a regulatory review?
Oh man, I can't speak to Canadian politics very well, but I can speak to Justin Trudeau in that there's a lot of excitement around him being the Premier of Canada rather than the Harper administration. And I will say that I think there's a little bit too much hype around Trudeau, and I feel Canada is going through an Obama-ish moment in which he was elected, and they I think a lot of liberals in Canada are thinking, oh, this is a sea change. And already in Canada, we pretty much saw that they were holding hands with the United States in terms of, in Paris, the agreement being all voluntary, non-binding, and more business as usual in terms of the Western powerful countries not paying back the climate debt that they owe other poor countries in the global South for the climate change impacts that they've created. And I see, unfortunately, more of the same happening in Canada. I think the only reason there's even a lull right now in pipeline building and tar sands extraction has a lot more to do with the price of oil globally than someone like Justin Trudeau.
The conscience. So. Yeah, we watched aghast when he came into office and said that things would, the Alberta tar sands area, that things would be basically business as usual. That was a bad moment for a lot of people who were keeping an eye on our northern neighbor. The two stories on the smog blog too that deserve some attention. The ban on exporting U.S. produced crude oil is part of a geopolitical argument. Iran and Russia have the ability to export their oil, so why not unleash Americans? And of course, firstly, there's this Vitol group, which should give people cause for alarm. The other part of this series of amazing reports that you put out was, of course, the renaming of anything that seems less than appealing to the public and that consumes mass media. They've come to dislike the term fracking, so now that's been renamed horizontal drilling, and we are now in they used the term renaissance. So this is the era we're in as far as fossil fuel extraction is renaissance, and more bogus talk than I've seen before in a long time, which is indicative of the fact that they're up to more trouble than we've seen in a long time. And the public is becoming vaguely aware of the situation, and thus it calls for renaming of all of the everything that's out there in the field, all the players on the field, just give them new names. That it's not quite so upsetting to the average news consumer. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the renaming of, say, fracking as horizontal drilling?
Yeah, if you're referring to a story that I wrote that was published about a PR campaign, the company named Continental Resources ran to promote the lifting of the oil export ban, and this push began actually in 2003, and everything I'm saying was not known until my article came out. I found a document on the Public Relations Society of America website, but it wasn't even on the public portion of it. It was on the members only, so I had to actually, to the story behind it, I had to get a membership. I didn't pay, it's a free membership, but I saw it was not prominently located. So I found this document, and it was, of course, Continental was bragging to their public relations industry peers that they had created this campaign. It was a three-page memo that they wrote explaining the whole campaign, and the name of the campaign was Miracle of American Oil, and it was how they used this meme, the Miracle of American Oil, starting in 2003, the 40th anniversary of the export ban, starting then to make their PR and lobbying push for the lifting of the ban. Of course, this document came out before they actually won the campaign. They won the campaign, obviously, at the beginning or mid-December when Congress and the White House signed off in the budget bill provision in it to lift that ban. But this was almost a two-plus year campaign in which they bragged, one, about rebranding fracking, calling it, as you said, horizontal drilling. Two, not calling it a boom, but calling it a renaissance in terms of, and then three, of course, the miracle of American oil. And the most interesting part of the whole thing, especially to people who are listening to KBOO and who support independent radio and independent journalism, is that how did they sell this campaign? Well, the biggest way they were able to do it was that they, and their kickoff event, they actually invited about a dozen mainstream media journalists, and then at least one of which, thereafter, in the next few months after that event, she wrote favorable articles. I looked, about Continental Resources. And Continental Resources is an interesting company in that the CEO, Harold Hamm, he was the energy advisor for Mitt Romney in his campaign in 2012. So he's very politically connected. He's been someone who's testified in front of Congress many times since their whole Miracle of American Oil campaign started. And so it was interesting to find that document. And you can see they even use that quote-unquote Miracle of American Oil phrase in congressional testimony, in different op-eds that they placed in newspapers. And so it was something that eventually culminated with the lifting of the ban. And they, of course, were not the only one to be pushing for this. I wrote an article that came out earlier that documents the entire industry efforts to have that ban lifted, and it was a whole army of lobbyists. And of course, there was an accompanying PR campaign. They funded think tanks. They had universities on their side, like Columbia University, the Center for Global Energy Policy. And so this was just one interesting example of how public relations and propaganda works in action.
What I wondered too, over the past few weeks when broadcasters have referred to this extraordinarily deadly, strange weather, 65 degrees in New York on Christmas, tornadoes, flooding, incredibly bizarre weather patterns. referred to as El Nino, a term which now we might even look upon lovingly as an artifact of the past, something that we can look back on and wish we were there again. It seems that that term is being improperly or misused, either accidentally through ignorance or deliberately an effort at subterfuge, as you've written in the smog blog, because none of this stuff that's happening now, this is way too extreme. This is way too
El Nino. El Nino is El Nino, but then there's El Nino on steroids when we have climate change involved with it. And so it's easy to write it off as just the, every once in a while, the El Nino weather pattern. But every weather pattern that exists gets more extreme and more accentuated under climate change, and more weird and strange, longer droughts, less rain. Areas that have less rain already have even less rain. So that's another good example. And it goes on and on. And so I think that that's what's happening this year with El Nino. We've seen El Nino. We've definitely seen less severe winters in the Midwest, that sort of thing. But I've never in my life lived through a winter in the Midwest like this, where it's hardly even been below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's pretty strange living in a place like Wisconsin, where it's usually negative 32 degrees below Fahrenheit.
Yeah. I understand you're in Canada, but which also is cold. But yeah, the El Nino business is... El Nino seems to be a term that we can relegate to the past. Well, that's about it. That's it for this Cascadia. That's it for this year. We go out on that note. Any final thought that you would like to leave us with before we let you go today?
Absolutely. Climate change will only be more severe as we go forward. We're seeing the impacts of being locked in. And I would say that you mentioned the article, but we didn't get to talk about it, but check out the article called Big Oil Argued for the U.S. Crude Exports to Fend Off Iran, but first exporter Vital Group also exported Iran's oil. So just check out T-Smug blog Vital Group, and you'll be able to learn a lot more about the machinations behind the lifting of the ban and some of the hypocrisy involved in doing so.
Thank you so much for that. My guest, of course, has been, once again, the inimitable Steve Horn with the Smug blog, and this has been, of course, Air Cascadia for December 30th, 2015. Tammy Dean engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News.